former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. This is hour number two of the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi here on this Easter Sunday. Happy Easter to everybody
Happy
out
Easter,
there.
Happy Easter, Femi.
Happy Master Sunday. Happy
What's your favorite last candy on Easter?
My favorite candy. Just a typical, like a chocolate bunny or something like that.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, it's pretty straight down the middle, huh?
I play it down the fairway.
You do the Easter egg hunts, too?
I haven't done one in, I think, about 25 years.
Come over to my son's house today. He's got a bunch of them.
Got the eggs all over
the place. Dominic will show you where to go for them all. He's probably got it all charted out.
I was going to say, does he have his book ready to go?
Yeah, he's ready to do it.
That's fun. No, Easter egg hunts are fun for the kids. Are you a big Peeps fan? I know Peeps are always, like, very controversial this time of the year.
No. You know, I mean, I don't even know what are Peeps.
I just see people talk about them. I've never had a Peep or whatever it is. But
I don't know. No, I'm pretty, look, I'm a fat guy, so I like all candy. I mean, let's be clear. You know, I mean, like, people, I don't like that kind of candy. Like, when you're a fat guy, you eat any candy, okay? Like, I don't like dark chocolate. I only like, no. I'm a fat guy. I eat everything, all right? Like, let's just put that out there. Like, there's no, like, I don't thumb my nose to any kind of candy. Yep. But I do have a problem, a serious problem with jelly beans. A serious problem.
Jelly beans.
Jelly beans are the killer. I like the big ones. Like Jeff Ruby's Steakhouse in Louisville, Kentucky, when I would go there, they had a huge, this is pre-COVID, they had a huge thing of those big jelly beans. I stick my hand in there and, I'm game over. I mean, I probably had 2,000 calories before I sat down to dinner. You know, I mean, like, oh my God, you know, who used to have it too was Del Frisco's. They used to have jelly. Wow. And, like, if I owned a restaurant, I'm having jelly beans in the front.
I did not know jelly beans was like a steakhouse deal.
Steakhouse treat, yeah. So that's like, to me, and if I have one, I'm going to have 8,000. Mm. So I can't have them. I have to go to jelly bean rehab. How about what Ronald Reagan had him in the White House when he was there, you know, and he kept the jar on his desk. That have no chance with me. I would kill that jar.
We all have our vices. So yours is jelly beans. Mine is gummy bears.
Really?
For me, gummy bears, that's the one where, like, because I'm not a big sweet tooth person. I can pretty much kind of keep back of them. But if you put some gummy bears out there, it's game over. Yeah. That's where, like you said, like the one that you eat 80, that's me with gummy bears.
Yeah, my wife buys jelly beans and puts them in the house. You don't have to eat them. They're for somebody else. Like, seriously. Why would you do that to me?
She's taunting you.
No doubt.
We'll see if anything is sweet here coming up at Augusta National right now.
Missed a putt. That's what's not sweet.
It's not sweet
about that.
Yeah, so he had a chance to eagle at one point. He ends up parring. So it's still
it's funny. Other than Victor Hovland, everybody else is struggling on the course. And the par fives are not generous at all.
Nope.
No one's birdie in the par fives. So it's a challenge.
Well, somebody from the back always goes low at Augusta. Somebody who's not, like, perceived to be in contention. And Hovland has been that person. I mean, he had 5 straight birdies here on this back nine on a course that's not very scoreable.
And I'm going to urge Sam Bennett to change the white pants. He's not putting well today, unfortunately. I'm rooting for him. Got to get him into something else because it's the pants. It's not the putter. It's the pants.
The Easter outfit is not going well for Sam Bennett. Somebody should have told him to put on the Sunday best here on this holiday. But I guess he didn't listen. And now he's no longer on the top of the leaderboard. That's how things go. Let's talk at the top of the draft board, though.
Yeah.
Anthony Richardson, the quarterback out of Florida, has been perceived as a guy who's going to go in the top 5, maybe even in the top 3. And we've seen some movement over at DraftKings to where Richardson was -250 on under 4.5 for his draft position. As of yesterday, he is now -135 on under 4.5. And the over, which was plus money, is now -105. But you had an interesting clip from our most recent GM Shuffle podcast talking about Richardson and the perception of him going near the top of the board.
To think that Anthony Richardson is worthy of a third or fourth pick in the draft isn't absurd. It's absurd squared. Like, it's not even, like, athletically, if we're running the Olympics, okay.
Yeah.
I get
100%.
It. You watch his tape. It's absurd to think that this young man's ready to play professional. It's not fair to the young man to play professional football. Mm-hmm. He's 2 years away from being a year away. Okay? Let me just put that out there. And I like Anthony Richardson. I have been a fan of his. I love his skill set. I do not love his tape. Let me be clear. I do not love his tape. The fact that he's being talked about in the top 10, which I do not believe will happen, right?
Ooh.
I don't. I mean, look, Malik Willis, last year was in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Go through all your mock drafts. Nobody grades these mock drafts. Nobody looks at them next year.
Mm. So, Anthony, are you moving the betting markets, or are the betting markets catching up to your opinion?
I think common sense is coming in. I think what Bucky said in the last block, Bucky said, like, when you pick somebody in the top five, you're hoping he has Pro Bowl skills. I mean, you know, we compare everybody to Josh Allen. Josh Allen went seventh overall. Lamar Jackson went 32, right? And mm-hmm. so what fans don't understand is the draft isn't just placing names on a board like the mock draft guys do. The draft is a grading system, and the verbiage must match what you're giving the player. So if you're saying this guy is worthy of a top five pick, you're saying he will be eventually a Pro Bowl player. He will dominate. He'll be in the top five players at his position once he's developed in the league. And the word development shouldn't even be in the conversation when mm-hmm. you're picking in the top five. But maybe for quarterbacks it would be. But you're talking about an elite level player. You're talking about someone who's going to dominate and cannot be, what the word we used in our grading system was, cannot be taken out of the game. What does that mean? That means that his skill set is so dominant that if they play him this way, he'll go that way. If they play him that way, he'll go this way. His skills are so dominant, you can't take him out of the game. That's why you shouldn't have graded Kyler Murray the first pick overall in the draft, because his skills are not dominant that if we keep him in the pocket, he can't take over the game. You follow me? Mm-hmm. So the verbiage has to match. And so what happens to these mocks is they don't have verbiage. They just put players where they want to put them. And then I think what Bucky also added to the conversation was that now we're propping these kids up with expectations that they're going to get let down. It's unfair.
Yeah. That's the part of that that's a bummer. Like for me, like, I mean, you think about Malik Willis last year. There's been other quarterbacks in the past where it's like, oh, like you're going to go in the top 10. You're going to go in the top 10. And all of a sudden you're sitting there in the green room and it's pick 27.
When you watch Malik Willis play in the preseason, you knew it was ridiculous that he was even considered by these people that are supposedly experts on the draft that he could have gone in the first round. Could you imagine if somebody would have picked Malik Willis in the top 15? I don't have to imagine. I saw EJ Manuel get picked in the top 15. Like, he wasn't a quarterback that should have gone in the first round. But the teams are so desperate for quarterbacks, they manufacture and they come up with excuses. Oh, okay, well, once this guy gets developed, he's – no, if he ever gets developed – okay, like to me, Kenny Pickett, good player. Is he ever going to be top five of his position? No chance. Okay, no chance. I don't see it. He doesn't have that skill set. Could he be a winning quarterback? Could he be in the top 20? Yeah. So Pittsburgh picks him in the lower part of the first round. Okay. They overreach for him, but at least they got a guy. They're not saying he's going to be an elite player. Kenny Pickett's college tape is much better than Richardson. Mm-hmm. Well, you say, well, the upside's higher with Richardson. If we get to the upside.
Yeah.
If we get there. I mean, Zion Williamson's a great player if he plays. He doesn't play. How do we know we're getting there?
You're taking the risk is what you're doing. So based on what you've seen on the tape and what you can marry with the potential and the upside, where would you draft Anthony Richardson if you were an NFL GM?
So for me, in my grading system, which we developed in Cleveland when I was there, and then Belichick, and it's still in the Patriots system, he's a potential starter. So that means he's a second-round, third-round player. He's a potential. He has a potential to start. Or – if I really wanted to be on it, I would say he's a D player, which is a developmental player, a 6-0. That's somewhere in the third or fourth round. You can't take players who you have to develop in the first round. Because here's what happens. The scout says you have to develop this player. The scout keeps his job. The coach gets fired.
So you didn't coach him up.
So that's the excuse. Well, they didn't coach him up. Maybe he wasn't able to be coached up. Maybe he wasn't good enough. Malik Willis was a D player last year. He was always a developmental player. He went in the third round. Probably a little earlier, should have gone to the top of the fourth. I mean, think about it. Dak Prescott had a much better Southeast Conference career. He went in the fourth. Was at the Senior Bowl. He went in the fourth. But see, what's happening is this inflation that's going on in college and by these mocks are pushing these guys up. And teams are getting a little bit more desperate instead of being patient and waiting for it.
Well, in fairness to the teams and to the mocks, wouldn't you say that quarterbacks should operate on a little bit of a different scale because of the positional value? Like, I hear what you're saying with, like okay, second or third round grade, but because of the positional value being the quarterback touching the football every play, wouldn't you take him in the back half of the first round to try to get that fifth-year option? And also knowing that if you do develop him and you do hit it big, it could change the organization.
What good is the fifth year if he's no good?
It's what's not any good if he's not.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, I got to be right on the player before I worry about the fifth year. And so, to me, we're making way too much out of the fifth year. I'd love to get the fifth year, but if he's only a good player, I got to make sure I evaluate the player correctly before I get to the fifth year. So, like, I wouldn't have any of that. You have to grade the player what you see. You can't manufacture it. Yes, quarterbacks are a little bit harder. You have to project them forward. Mm-hmm. But they have to show you enough on tape to project them forward. Everybody running around on Josh Allen saying, see, I told you. You know, sometimes, you know, a broken clock's right twice a day. Like, sometimes it happens. And I would say, if you were really honest about Buffalo's offense, when Josh Allen doesn't really run, you know, and ask Stephon Diggs. There's times where they get flustered. Yeah, I mean, look what Cincinnati did to him.
We don't have to ask Stephon Diggs. We see him on the sidelines.
I mean, look what Cincinnati did to him in that playoff game. They stoned him. They had nothing going. And people have played Josh Allen differently. Now, he's improved his accuracy, no doubt. Is he an elite player? There's no doubt. I'm not arguing that. I was wrong on his evaluation coming out of Wyoming. I admit that. But there's times where he reverts back.
And I think the point that Bucky Brooks brought up in our first hour is that sometimes as scouts, when you miss on one, then you almost overcorrect. You over-index going forward there. And that maybe that's happening when he brought up Will Levis out of Kentucky.
Yeah, that's, to me, Will Levis is a non-rhythmic. We'll talk about the next break, which we should continue to do, because I think Will Levis isn't what people think he is.
Well, let's discuss that next year on the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM Casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Femi Abebefe. We're hanging out here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Speaking of the in-game betting, if you were interested in in-game betting the Masters, you would find that Brooks Koepka is now minus 145, the favorite, after Jon Rahm just dropped another shot here. So Koepka now has a three-stroke lead as they're sitting on the 17th tee.
Yeah, as my man Bill Berman just astutely texted me, your boy Rahm's putter has left him.
It's missing
in action. Same thing with Bennett. I mean, I think as this weather heats up, it's going to be fun to see what happens with the greens, how they handle the greens, because this is going to come down to whose putter gets hot here. And, you know, Koepka has not been able to make a putt. He's had a couple opportunities. We know the ball's not traveling. It's landing soft, so the distance is a problem. But it's going to be a great 20 holes we have ahead of us, really. It's going to be wonderful to watch. They'll get some rest here. What time is it? It's, 11:15 on the East Coast now. So they'll probably tee off at like a 2 o'clock typically, like they usually they tip off at 2:30 anyway, East Coast time.
Rahm right now is plus 225. Over at
Benito. That's pretty good. I mean, look, I think once you get through this day, and he's got two holes to play, which are difficult. But once you get through this, it goes back to that we're on Sunday at the Masters again, and the sun's out, and maybe it's going to warm up. I mean, you could feel it's warming up a little bit.
Yeah, he likes that one.
I think it takes some comfortability. I'm not a golfer, but I would get the sense with the weather changing and the conditions being ever changing, you've got to figure it all out.
Yeah, and honestly, Rahm's putter kind of cooling off shouldn't be a surprise, because the way he started this day, I mean, he made back-to-back birdies. They made a long par putt as well. So, like, his putter was hot to start. That the putter can be very volatile. So maybe he'll get it back for the final 18.
Especially when you're not, you're used to the fast greens, and now with the weather and the wind and the humidity and all the things that are going on, so it's always a challenge to you have to be adaptable.
I'll tell you, a guy who's been hot with the putter is Victor Hovland. So he just parred there on 17. From 11 through 15, he went birdie, 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 and he is now just one back.
He played the second. like typically most you have to play. Birdied the two par fives, you know, and then he sprinkles in birdies at the other holes. So, I mean, yeah, he will. It'll be. I would believe it's going to be. It's going to be interesting if he can hold off. Mm-hmm. If Victor plays in the final pairing with, you know, if Rahm, you know, whoever goes in, whoever's, if Rahm stays at 9-under, he'll play with Koepka again. Yeah. But it's going to be interesting to see if that changes.
I think they'll still do the threesomes just because they're trying to get this done today.
Yeah, I guess
so. I think we might get Koepka, awesome, Rahm, Hovland, all three there in the final pair. I mean, Hovland, like I said, he's just one back of Rahm now, where it looked like we had a two-horse race. Got a third horse emerging here as we're heading to the final round over at Augusta National. But let's talk about back to the NFL here. J-E-T-S. Jets. There's a lot going on with the New York Jets, as always, here throughout this offseason. Their general manager, Joe Douglas, was hanging out with the Boomer and Geo crowd out there in the Meadowlands. They had a nice little event there with WFAN, the Fan. And Friday night, I'm sure, you know, the vibes were good out there. You know, hydration was high. And Joe Douglas was asked about the potential trade for quarterback Aaron Rodgers from the Green Bay Packers. And he said, quote, "He's going to be here." And the crowd goes wild. They're Jets fans waiting to when Rodgers will finally put on Gang Green's uniform. But it feels like we're just kind of still dancing here, waiting towards maybe the draft when something gets done. But we're all in limbo here with this Jets-Rodgers trade pending coming up.
The Packers have the pressure on them because they want those draft picks to help their team. They want those draft picks. Whatever draft picks they might get, they want them to be involved in this draft. So the longer this goes without them sealing a deal to know where they are in the draft, and for the Jets, the best thing that could happen to the Jets is Saturday after the draft, Rodgers still be a Packer. Because the Jets would have had a draft. And so now they're paying on a future draft, which would be ideal. Because they could take those first round, second round, and third round picks and put them on their team. Mm-hmm. And that would really parlay them in, especially in this draft where there's a lot of good tight ends in this draft. There's some offensive linemen in this draft. I mean, there's corners in this draft. There's not a lot of defensive linemen in the draft. The Jets are good there. So I think that would help. Like, this notion that it's going to happen on draft day or when the Jets pick in the second round is ridiculous. If it's going to happen, it's got to happen the Monday before the draft. It's got to. Because once you get into the draft, the Jets all of a sudden – well, he's going to be here anyway. Like, they have no urgency to make the deal until Saturday.
And you would assume as well with the New York Jets, if you make the trade after the draft, those are going to be worse picks in 2024 because you would think that with Rodgers, they'll be a better team.
The one thing you can't do, one thing which you want to do when you're trading for draft picks, if you're trading a player for a pick, they trade this guy for a fourth. As an executive, you're thinking, okay, I'm trading this guy. That pick will be one something. Okay, let me look at the board over the last 5 years and what players were picked in this range that I would be trading away for the player. Because fans only see the pick for the player. They never go back and put the pick in, the name of the pick, to the player. So that's really the trade. The trades are always player for player. Yeah. We just see them as player for pick, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you don't go back and look at it, okay, Amari Cooper got traded to Dallas for a first-round pick. Who did the Raiders pick? Well, they got robbed on that deal.
Yeah, it was like Jonathan Abram, wasn't it, or something like that?
So that's right. It was Abram.
Yeah.
So okay, would you trade Jonathan Abram for Amari Cooper? Of course you wouldn't. But we just see it as you're getting a one. No one goes – every trade is a player, unless it's the NBA, which we don't know what the hell they're doing. But – you know, so every trade is a player for player trade. Mm. It's just it's layered as a player for pick. Oh, we got a pick. We got all these picks. Well, you got to be able to translate those picks. So if you're Brian Gutekunst over at the Packers, you want to know where you're going. Like, if you think you can get that too from the Jets, you know. Right now, as you sit in your office at Lambeau Field, you know what player you're going to be able to get for him. You don't know the specific player, but you know the range of the player.
Yeah. It's almost like when you're making those pick for or player for picks trades, it's like player to be named later almost. Is how it should be framed.
It's exactly what it is. Yeah. And so what Al Davis used to say all the time, and it used to drive him crazy, when the media would report, well, they gave up two number ones for the player. And Al Davis would say, but they got a player back. So they didn't give up two ones. They only gave up an extra one. because that player should be worth a one. Mm-hmm. You follow me?
100%.
So you're giving. So basically, I traded my this player for an extra one. Yep. It's not two. He traded Michael Haynes for two ones. He got Michael Haynes.
Yeah, and that's. I remember the Cowboys when they after they made the Amari Cooper trade on that draft night when they had no first round pick. They tweeted, "Hey, here's our first round pick. It's Amari Cooper."
And nobody buys into that. Nobody says, "Oh, that's great." But that's the actuality of it all. So, and that's why the Packers have more of a sense of urgency to make the deal before it, because you want to know what you're getting back. When you wait until next year, like you made this astute point, if I wait till next year to make this trade, the Jets are probably picking somewhere between 27 and 32. Now, I'm sure Gutz is telling Douglas, look, if we don't make this deal before this draft, I promise you, it's going to cost you way more. Mm-hmm. It's going to cost you at least your one, which is really a low two now. Bucky made a great point. Bucky said there's only 15 guys that have first-round grades, okay?
Yep.
I would say that 30, most teams will have less than 20 guys with first-round grades on them. Mm. So you're trading. So Goot knows he's going to get he's got to get that pick from the Jets because it's going to be 27, 28, 29, maybe it's 32. It's going to be a second-round type player.
Urgency. It's what we need to get this thing finally done, and maybe we're going to get it here in a couple of weeks. The Jets are also hard at work talking to free agent wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. He is scheduled to have a meeting with the Jets tomorrow morning. Finally, it feels like we're kind of getting some sort of a conclusion here with Odell Beckham Jr. I'm sure he'll take a physical. They'll work out.
That's going to be the interesting thing because the Jets, so we know this, every medical team in the NFL is different. Mm-hmm. The Jets are very difficult medically. They're just not, you know, cough twice, you pass, right?
Yep.
They are very difficult. Their team doctor is very hard. It's going to be interesting to see where they grade him, the medical staff, to then allow Douglas to see what he could do contractually. Like, this isn't, oh, we got a chance to get Odell. Like, Odell's coming in. The doctor doesn't look at Odell any differently than he would some college free agent. Actually looks at him harder because there's more investment.
And then after the physical, if he passes it, then they get start talking then about the money.
There's one thing. There's passing, and then there's passing with restrictions on money, too. Man.
Maybe we'll get a resolution with Odell and Aaron Rodgers this upcoming week. And the all-star team out in Gotham City will be put together for the New York Jets. Thomas Gable, race sportsbook director over at the Borgata, joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event, date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up for only $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi. Michael, the 17th green at Augusta National. What the kids say, it's catching bodies.
Yeah.
It's catching bodies, taking souls.
They're just not comfortable with the greens. You could see these guys. I mean, I would suspect that once they get into the clubhouse, they're headed over to the putting green and trying to get work on their game over there a little bit, because you can just feel it. I mean, the minute they and as we've been watching, the minute they putt, it'd be interesting to see what TG thinks here. Is there's no confidence the ball's even going anywhere near the cup.
Yeah, you can just tell the minute it leaves the putter that it's up. Oh, nope, no chance. As Brooks Koepka, he missed a short little par putt there, so he'll drop a shot. Now has a 2-shot lead heading to the 18th green to finish up the third round. And let's welcome in our buddy, final guest here on the program on this Easter Sunday, Thomas Gable, race and sportsbook director over at the Borgata. TG, hope all is well. Happy Easter. Happy end of the NBA regular season. All the best here. And before we get to the Masters, I want to talk about what we saw last night. UFC 287. Israel Adesanya had this line at the end of his knockout win against Alex Pereira last night. Said, "They say revenge is sweet, and if you know me, you know I got a sweet tooth." Hopefully that sweet tooth treated you guys well at the betting window with the favorite winning last night at UFC 287.
Yeah, that was a nice result for us there. And you know, first, also happy Easter to both of you. But Adesanya winning was a good result, kind of in an unexpected way there. I you know, yesterday we talked about, you could see that fight ending in, you know, so many different fashions. And Adesanya up against the cage there and comes back and finishes it for air. But that was a good one. The Burns Masvidal fight actually ended up decent. We're taking some late Masvidal money. We didn't really touch on that one yesterday because of lack of time. But, you know, Burns was such a prohibitive favorite in that. People, especially when it comes to UFC or boxing, typically don't like to lay those big, big prices. So they go into the prop market and, you know, maybe look for, you know, method of victory or a round prop or something like that. But Burns wins that decision, unanimous decision there in that one, probably the end there for Masvidal's career in the UFC. But yeah, overall, it was a decent card last night and decent results for us.
The Masters also going on here, Thomas. And right now, Brooks Koepka, we were talking about it to come back to this segment, has a 2-shot lead over Jon Rahm. Yeah. Victor Hovland's been making a move as well. So it appears we have a 3-horse race heading into the final round. Is there an outcome that you guys are hoping to avoid here on this Sunday?
Hovland is not a good scenario for us. But I'll tell you from an in-play perspective for us, it's much better having a third or even a fourth guy get into contention and having just, you know, somebody run away with it, or just having a 2-horse race where it really looked like it was going to be potentially with just Koepka and Rahm kind of dueling it out today. But having Hovland now get into contention, play himself into contention, and Koepka and Rahm kind of come back a little bit towards him, that's big from a betting perspective, because you always want to offer more options. Hovland now currently, we have him 5-1 in play, was 10-1, you know, just a couple minutes ago there. But obviously a costly bogey there for Koepka, who has looked pretty steady to finish out this, the third round today for him. You know, he hasn't really done much, but hasn't done much to hurt himself. So that was kind of a costly mistake there. And but Rahm definitely just does not appear comfortable with the putter today at all, which obviously is a long day. These guys have 18 more to play this afternoon. So a lot to come. The pressure is going to get ratcheted up. Course is going to continue to dry out. And, you know, if there's one course in the world that can handle the elements, it's Augusta National. It's while, yes, it's wet and the greens are holding more than they typically would on a Sunday like this, but you know, it still looks to be in phenomenal shape. And I think the speed has really kind of messed with Rahm here a little bit on the greens.
TG, what do you think the final score, forget who wins, what do you think the final score will be? Because it does seem like these greens are starting to get heated up a little bit. The sun's out. I don't know if it's getting any warmer. I see guys have taken off some layers. Nobody's wearing the fuzzy hats anymore. But I do you feel like this is going to become a tournament where 12 wins, 13? What's your number?
No, I think it's going to be either 12 or 13. We'll probably get it done because it just, again, it doesn't seem like anybody is really going super low. Now, Hovland had that really nice stretch there on the back nine to play himself into contention, but I think 12 or 13 will probably be able to take this home. You know, Rahm is definitely a best-case scenario for us to win this. Koepka is almost a break even, I think, at this point, when you add in the in play and the pre-flop together. But Rahm is definitely, at this point, looks like who we're going to be pulling for.
We're speaking with Thomas Gable, race and sportsbook director over at the Borgata. TG, let's transition over to the NBA. Today is the final day of the regular season. Thankfully, we will get some playoff basketball coming up here this week, starting with the play-in tournament. Obviously, Michael Lombardi, big 76ers fan. He's been very pessimistic about this team. That should be come to no surprise to anybody listening. Should Michael be as pessimistic as he is about this Sixers team heading into the postseason?
Well, Michael is not only a dedicated Sixers fan, but he's also very intelligent, and he knows he's seen this story play out many times with the Sixers. So, you know, this is in 1983. There's no Dr. J and Moses to lead the way here for the Sixers this year. Now they do have the scoring champion and the assist leader this year with Embiid and Harden, but Harden. I think the key for them is going to come down to two things. One is health. It seems like Embiid, there's always some sort of injury that crops up in the playoffs that hampers him. We'll see if he can remain healthy through the playoffs. Harden's been dealing with the Achilles issue for the last, I'd say, month or so, maybe a little bit longer there. But, you know, you saw it against Miami the other night. They were playing everybody, but they came out extremely listless and got blown out. And then, you know, 2 days ago, you have all of the backups playing, and they come away with a win against the Atlanta Hawks. But the biggest weakness, I think, besides potential injuries for the Sixers, it's going to come down to their transition defense. The secret's out. I mean, everybody in the league knows that's where the issues lie on defense for the Sixers. You can beat them in transition. You can get them down to four. They're not great at getting back. So we'll see if they can correct that. I have my doubts. But, you know, am I as pessimistic as Michael is for them to be able to get to the NBA Finals? Maybe not as pessimistic, but I just don't see it really happening. I don't see them.
You'll take as much money on that 12-1 to get to the finals as anybody. You know they'll load up. You know you can.
Round loss?
Huh?
Your prediction's the second round loss.
Oh, this I actually
called it a lock.
It's a lock. Brooklyn. You know, if Brooklyn was a little better, I would have seen Brooklyn knocking them out. But you're right. I think that everybody knows get up and down the court, make it a fast game. He's not going to run up and down the court. He plays from 3-point line to 3-point line. Now, you know, he makes that 15 foot. He's great, all that. But they can't run. And look, we know Doc in a series. Are you going with Doc? And he's going to get out coached, you know, by everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's you're right. He will be outcoached. He will be outcoached no matter who he's going up against in the later rounds of the playoffs. So I do like Michael's prediction. I could certainly see them bowing out in the second round. I don't see them getting to the finals. They would actually be a great scenario for us to do that. We took some big bets on Boston very early in the season to win the Eastern Conference. Of course, taking Milwaukee money. But so the Sixers would be phenomenal for us financially if they could get to the finals. But I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, and we're seeing wind too, TG. As we're looking at our TV monitors here down at Augusta, it looks like it's getting windy and the sun's out. So hopefully you have a good day today, TG.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you.
That is Thomas Gable, Racing Sports McGregor over at the Borgata. He agrees with your lock, your Stone Cold lock prediction.
We have talked about this a lot. You know, we both know what the deal is. We're both realistic. We're rooting for the team, but we also know the team.
I agree with you, too. Second round exit. We'll wrap up the show on the other side. It's the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sports books, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas? You should. You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Welcome back. This is the final segment of the Lombardi Line.
Yeah, I can't wait for today. Wow, this is getting interesting here with the wind kicking up. The weather's getting warmer. They don't have any feel for the greens. It's you know, Sam Bennett had to hit an iron going in. Look at the flag here, fam.
Rom's going to putt from off the green.
Yeah, I think this is going to be interesting how it's all going to play. And are we going to do 9 and 18 in one, or is it going to be more of a shotgun start here?
I believe so. It'll be staggered, and that's a really, really good putt. They're probably about as best as you can do. Because you don't want to blow that thing right by.
Yeah, no,
and you'll be in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, no question.
So Rom will, the greens have been tricky. So, I mean, nothing's a gimme he'll have about 2 feet.
I don't know where
Koepka
ended up on his long putt. He had a long putt.
Yeah, he's within 3 feet. So he should be able to tap in for a par. So I think we'll have both Koepka and Rom finish there with a two
shot. Are we getting difference. The 9-1 starts? The 10-1?
I think we will. If they want to get this thing done,
but I
today,
would suspect the leaders are going off one.
One, yeah, the leaders will go off one.
Everybody else is going to
go off a 10. Yeah. That's going to be my guess. I haven't seen it.
We better
Twitter.
Check with Will Hill. He's probably working on the scheduling of this right now.
Is he the one that we should be blaming for the broadcast yesterday?
No, he wants to correct some of the things there. He's they're not listening to him on everything, but I'm sure they're going to listen to him on where they want to start this. I'm sure they on the phone call to Connecticut right now. I'm sure that the Masters Club is calling him correctly.
Fred Ridley, the whole crew.
Right. Everybody's got a direct line to Will to understand, like, how should we play this and who should we have first off the tee? Will, what do you think?
Recommendations.
Then
Then
he goes right in NFL scheduling, you know, so he's got a busy week ahead of him.
We do. I mean, the schedule is ours. They're already working. What are they going to do with
he's
the
been
Jets?
Hot, though. I got to give, you know, I tease Will Hill about being an expert in everything, mm-hmm. but he's been really hot on his picks, baseball, college basketball, all that stuff. So he's been doing a hell of a job.
If you're the schedule maker, and to kind of veer off the path here, oh, by the way, this is the Lombardi Line hanging out with you guys. What do you do with the Baltimore Ravens? Like do you take them out of all primetime games but one
I think Baltimore's always going to be an interesting story. They've got a great fan base. Mm-hmm. I don't think the owner would allow that. And I think that the confidence that you – one thing that you have to have is who do you have confidence in to get it to play good?
Yeah.
And there's a track record for Baltimore that they, even though he has missed games, they've played well. They've been entertaining games. You put Baltimore-Pittsburgh on
that'll
a Sunday night, you know you're going to get a hell of a rating. You know you're going to get people going to be engaged. Baltimore-Cincinnati, you put Joe Burrow on, you know you're going to get a hell of a rating. So it's a great story, and, you know, I don't think you lose those. It's Arizona's getting one game. I hate to tell Jonathan Gannon that. You know, they're going to get one game. There's certain teams that you just are not going to get a lot of.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think
if Carolina, to me, Carolina is going to be the interesting. How many do they get, especially with Bryce Young coming out? Yeah. If they pick Bryce Young, you get the Alabama kid with a good team around him, a team that was close. Mm-hmm. That's a great story. I think they'll get a bunch of games as well.
I think they'll definitely get like an early season national TV game because like in case they have their struggles, they don't want to put them out there in December and be like, oh, like this team is 4-11 or whatever like
that. Which to me, that thinking is wrong because he'll get better as the year goes on.
Yeah.
You know, and he'll be in more of an interesting situation as the years go on. So, Rom finished up. He's in at 9 under.
Yeah. So, yeah, both Rom and Koepka shoot 73. At 11.
So Koepka shot one over for the day.
Yeah, both of them. Yeah, Rom and Koepka match each other with 73s. On the third round there, so we will head to the final round as our boy Sam Bennett, the amateur, will have the last stroke here of moving.
Yeah, if I'm Sam, I'm going to wear something that goes with green. I'm just going to take it over. You know, like, so why not? Get a pair, you know, I'm coming to win the green jacket. What does he have to lose, right?
Absolutely nothing.
I mean, the poor kid, he, really, when you watch his round, it wasn't that he played poorly, he just didn't putt. He couldn't make a putt.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, but both he and Rom had back-to-back bogeys on the back nine. So it's not like he's playing poorly.
Right.
Like the conditions are just difficult.
They're hard.
And the fact that he's hanging – I mean, usually you'll see a guy have a good round. It's like, okay, everybody can have a good round once you get to that level, but they won't sustain it.
Right.
He's been sustaining this. Like the guy's in the top 10, and he's an amateur at the Masters.
Right. And I think that's why you have to like Koepka today because he's a two-time U.S. Open champion. Mm-hmm. We know the conditions at the Open are really hard.
Yep.
And these are going to be really hard conditions in the afternoon. I mean, this is not going to be – somebody's not shooting 64 today.
No.
Because just the nature of the weather here. So, you know, if Koepka continues to play the way he did, he had the first three putt on 17 in the entire weekend. And, you know, that was – I don't know how that went. So here we go. We're going to – the final round will start at 2 o'clock today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jim Nantz is going to remember Tom Weisskopf, which is always good. I always love that Jim Nantz remembers Augusta because you go back and you relive those memories of Augusta. And the best part is even though the course – you know, the course hasn't changed, it feels the same to you.
Yeah, so it looks like we're going to only have the two guys. So they're not going to do the three.
I thought so. Yeah. Because they could maybe they'll play three, you know, and the guys that are out of it and get them out of the way.
Yeah. So Sam Bennett will
again, we're going to have to consult with Will Hill on this to see what he would want.
Does he like Cantlay and Hovland?
I don't know. I'm going to have to call him after the show to see. I'm sure he's in deliberation here with considering it all.
So there you go. Yeah, Koepka and Rahm, a couple of major winners. Koepka, a four-time major winner. He's won a couple of PGA championships.
I think it's going to be really critical to get your feeling in your hands to a level to where you can get back. I think that's going to be the sense of urgency. How do I make this putting? How do I get my putter going again? I mean, for as great as Victor played today, Hovland, he only shot 70. I mean, you know, we're acting like he shot 64. He shot 70. He just, you know, he got himself back in contention with a 70. Think about that.
Only three back. Well, hold on. Let's table this for just a little bit because I want to get our pro tip in for the day so that our viewers can put this into their betting belt. And our pro tip, we talked about the quarterbacks with Bucky Brooks earlier. We've talked about it all throughout the week and all throughout this show, is that these quarterback draft props, especially as it pertains to Anthony Richardson and Will Levis, sometimes these things are a little inflated just because of the amount of attention that the signal callers always get every draft cycle.
Yeah, and so you're paying a tax for that.
Yeah.
And you're just going to have to rely on good information to really understand that these quarterbacks are not the answer. What you don't want to do in anything is pick a player at a position and still need the position as a team need. The draft is about satisfying team needs, whether it's this year's team needs or next year's team needs based on free agency. And if you pick a player, the Bears are in that situation. As much as we debate about Justin Fields, if they're wrong by not picking the quarterback this year, you know, they've gone through Trubisky and now they got Justin Fields. If they're wrong, they're going to have to pick a guy again. That's what you don't want to. You want to solve problems with the draft, and I'm not sure these guys solve problems.
So keep that in mind there when you're betting the draft. I know it's less than 3 weeks away. It's gonna be a whole lot of fun here. So
yeah, and I think the other one too is Seattle and Detroit. Like everybody has them taking quarterbacks because they have these extra picks. They have these top 10 picks to make their defense better. The reason they didn't go, Seattle didn't win the playoffs, or they go far into the playoffs, is because, and Detroit didn't make it, is because their defense wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, if I'm Seattle and I'm picking sixth or fifth, and I have a chance to get a legitimate defensive player, whether it's Carter, whether it's Anderson, whether it's Walker, whomever, or a corner, Gonzalez, whatever, I'm going to pick that guy. I think I fix my defense. Now, if I'm picking later, and the quarterback's there, I think Bucky's right. If Seattle's picking in the 20s and Richardson's there, maybe you do take that chance.
If I'm Seattle, I'm taking Carter at 5.
If he makes it to you.
That's, yeah.
I mean, the question is, Houston to me is really the question. Do they go with everybody assumes what they're going to go with in terms of C.J. Stroud, or are they going to change? But, look, we got a couple weeks to debate about that. I'm wishing you well luck on today on your Rahm ticket.
Who do you think is going to win this thing? Because Koepka right now is plus 105. Rahm
I'm going to go Koepka. I'm going to root for Koepka. I just think
rooting against me making money.
I'm not. I wish you good luck. What do you want me to do? I wish you good luck.
Ride with me with Rahm. That's what I want you to do. John Rahm is plus 175 right now. I think Rahm wins it. I think he's going to win it. I think the putter will heat back up again. And the course fits his eyes.
Yeah, so no, I think like the course fits Koepka too.
It does fit him well.
It really. I thought Koepka was going to win one of these before.
Yeah.
Now the injury had hurt him, but you know now he's healthy, so we'll see.
Koepka was dangerously close from taking it from Tiger in 2019,
yep.
As all of America was rooting against him. We got that moment though back in the day. But that does it for us. Thank you to Bucky Brooks. Thank you to Jonathan Von Tobel and Thomas Gable. Thank you to you, Michael. Thank you to our producer Elliot Bowman and the entire crew behind the glass. We wish you all the best of luck. Coming up next is The Handle with Dave Ross and Matt Brown here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.